Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
It's Dave Plyer live from the Allstate Showcase Studios on Chicago's very own 720 WGN. So I first discovered our guest as the hot blonde in the T-Bird in the coming-of-age film American Graffiti, before she landed her iconic role as the delightfully ditzy Chrissy Snow in the 70s and 80s on the classic ABC sitcom Three's Company, which she co-starred with John Ritter and Joyce DeWitt. Then later in the 1990 sitcom Step by Step with Dallas veteran Patrick Duffy, she co-hosted a CBS version of vintage TV classic Candid Camera, and the list goes on. Suzanne is also a New York Times bestselling author, entrepreneur, and hosts the empowering talk show Suzanne Summers Breaking Through, and she's joining us tonight. Hello, Suzanne.
Good evening.
So I actually threw in American Graffiti last night just to prep myself.
It really was so pivotal.
It was pivotal. Well, that's what I was going to ask you. It's such a classical piece of Americana, and there you were, a vision and a goddess, which I believe Richard Dreyfuss called you. And was that your first credited role in a movie? Was that a movie that kind of put you on the map?
Yes, and I had no idea of the impact. I had no idea who any of these people were. I had no idea who George Lucas was. I had heard of Francis Coppola, and I remember the first night in the trailer, George Lucas and Coppola came in to talk to the cast, and the cast was, as you know, Harrison Ford and Richard Dreyfuss and Cindy Williams and Ron Howard and Paul LaMatte and Candy Clark, and it sure didn't look like a really illustrious group to me.
Yeah, right. Well, very new. Everyone was very new.
Everyone was at the beginning of their careers. And I remember George saying to me, everyone's going to remember the blonde in the Thunderbird. And I thought, yeah, right. And then when I saw it, I was even more disappointed because it was maybe, 5 seconds?
Yeah. And you just whispered. You just whispered your line, barely.
And the night before, because it was my first speaking part ever, I practiced. I had a buffet for George. I could say I love you 100 different ways. And in fact, when I did my one-woman Broadway show, which was called The Blonde and the Thunderbird,
right,
we wrote a song. Kenneth Mitzi Welsh wrote this special material for me called How Do I Say I Love You? And it was all about all the different ways that I figured out how I could just wow him. And I get in the car, and he leans in, and he says, oh, by the way, just mouth it.
I like that. And it was very impactful.
Well, I mean, that's why he's the filmmaker that he is.
But, that's right.
You know, I made $136.72.
Oh, so you're getting some residual checks, too, then?
Yeah, they've stopped coming, as you can imagine, about 40 years ago. And but it was the 5 seconds that gave me my career, and it was probably just because of the positioning. It was George Lucas. It was a sleeper movie that no one had any expectations for or about, and all of a sudden this movie takes over. And I was really so broke at the time that I had to scrape together the money to see it. I really had no idea, and so I never understood the impact. Until I was, I had been a single teenage mother, and I was living in Sausalito and kind of feeling like a loser, and I'd always wanted to be in this business, and because I got pregnant at 17, I had to leave school, but even at that, I had gotten a scholarship to college and was accelerated to the first year in fine arts, and I got the leads in the musicals always at school, and in my last year of high school, I did Guys and Dolls. I was Adelaide, and probably nobody listening will remember Walter Winchell, but Walter Winchell was quite somebody in his era as a columnist. And he came to this production. He had heard about it. And at the end of the show that night, he came on stage, and he came right up to me. And in his Damon Runyon-esque voice said to me, "You're going someplace, sister." And I remember thinking, wow. And I had all these big dreams, and then I got pregnant, and at that time it just sort of put your life on hold or on stop.
But isn't it true that everybody in their life has like one person that has said something so inspirational to you like that, that really kind of drove you at that time?
Well, I mean, I would think so, if you're lucky.
Right.
And whatever he saw, he had to see it in its rawest form because, you know, I was probably 16 when he came. But then, of course, I did get a music scholarship to college, so obviously other people saw. So when I was living in Sausalito, a 19 or 20-year-old divorced mother, no money, I didn't know how to make a living, so I was always combing the newspapers, and I'd get a hold of a copy of the trades from a friend of mine who worked in the news department at ABC, and I was looking through the trades one day, and there was this ad, or whatever they called them at the time, for a guest star on Dom DeLuise's sitcom called Lots of Luck.
Mm-hmm.
And when I read it, it described me. Small town girl, has no idea of what she looks like, which I didn't. I just somehow knew when I read this, I thought I could do that. And I gathered together the money to fly to Los Angeles, which I think was $25 at that time.
Wow.
It was really hard for me.
Yeah, but at that time, that's a lot of money.
Together.
It's a lot of money, yeah.
Yeah, and ignorance is bliss. I got myself to NBC. Why are you here? I'm here for the Dom DeLuise show, because I didn't know you need an agent. I didn't know you need to be set up. Oh, yeah. It's over there. Go down the hall. I go down the hall. I walk in. I see all these other girls signing in, so I signed in. They hand me a script, and all the other girls are reading a script, so I read the script, and then they call me in to read. And when I finished, the producers, I remember it was Sam Denoff and Bill Persky, and they said, very nice.
Dick Van Dyke Show. Dick Van Dyke Show, I believe, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
And so many others, like giants. And they said, we're going to give you a callback. And I said, thank you. So I go out to the receptionist, and I said, I have a callback. She said, well, good for you. And I said, what is that? And she looked at me, and she said, they're going to call you back. I went, when? She said, I don't know. Now I'm her problem, right?
You're right.
Where do I go? She said, I don't know. Why don't you go sit in the commissary? So I go sit in the commissary, and I'm all alone. It's about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And the only resume I had was I had written this book of poetry that I got published. And on the back, my only credit was The Blonde and the Thunderbird and American Graffiti. So I used that as my resume. So I had a few in my purse. And in walks Johnny Carson and his producer, Fred DeCordova. And I'm the only person there. So Johnny walks by and he goes, hey, little lady, what are you doing here? And I said, I have a callback, because now I had some lingo.
right.
And he said, oh, yeah, what for? I said, Dom DeLuise, he's a friend of mine. He's a good guy. Hey, I hope you get it. And so after they left, I thought, why don't I take a chance? So I go to the Tonight Show office, and I leave a copy of my little poetry book for Johnny Carson and one for Fred DeCordova and one for both of their secretaries. And that was Wednesday. And on Friday night, my first time ever on television, I'm standing behind the curtain, that famous curtain,
mm-hmm.
at the Tonight Show, and I thought, God, they must really love my poetry. And I hear him say, we've all been wondering who the mysterious blonde in the Thunderbird was. Well, we found her. And they opened the curtain, and the audience went, whoo! And that was the moment I realized that American Graffiti had that impact, and that the blonde in the Thunderbird had impact. And I'm sitting next to Johnny Carson. It was surreal, as you can imagine. First time on television, sitting, talking to him, and he loved me because I was so unpolished and so unfinished that he started having me on every month to read him poetry with, like, this gimmick. And all of a sudden, then my poetry book became the number one best-selling poetry book in America, again,
wow.
All surreal. And that went on for a number of years. I worked off that little book for so long, and one of those times, they had done two pilots so far for Three's Company, and they weren't happy with the Chrissy Snow on either of those pilots, and it was Fred Silverman, who was the head of ABC television at the time. He said, you know, I see this girl on the Tonight Show.
On the Tonight Show, right.
Yeah, all the time. He said, let's bring her in, and that is how I got Three's Company.
Well,
Well, one little line.
One little line. That's all it was. And we're going to talk to Suzanne Summers about that next on 720 WGN. Day player on 720 WGN. We're talking to Suzanne Summers about Three's Company, the complete series coming out on DVD this week, the Come and Knock on My Door edition, and as well as her groundbreaking health and beauty business. And by the way, this Tuesday, almost 30 years after the final episode aired on ABC, Three's Company, the complete series, Come and Knock on My Door collection is being released with all 174 episodes, two original pilots, never seen before bloopers. Both included John Ritter's Jack, as well as both actors who played the Ropers. And as Suzanne said to us before we went to break, there was a couple other people that played her role of Chrissy Snow. So how did you get the call?
Another interesting story. I was then in love with my then boyfriend, Alan Hamill, who's been my husband now for 40, we've been together 47 years.
That's incredible.
And we were on a vacation in Eleuthera in the Caribbean, and we were flying home, and it was the first time that it had ever snowed in the Caribbean. And we're in this little, chopper kind of propeller plane to get to Miami, and hitting just terrible air pockets and thunder and lightning all around. And the pilot starts screaming, "Put your head between your knees, put your head between your knees." And there are two native ladies on the plane started wailing because they, "Lord, we're going to die. Lord, we're going to die." And my boyfriend, who is now my husband, and I said our kind of last words to one another because we were heading down. And I thought, oh, my God, it's over. And I really was in this place. And somehow the pilot regained control, and we landed in Miami. And the next day, I'm back in L.A. I had moved to L.A. by that time. And I hadn't moved to L.A. yet. I was with him in L.A. And the phone rings from this friend of my husband who was sort of acting sort of like an agent, but she wasn't. And she said, I got a call from ABC for a show called Three's Company, and they're really interested in you. And I said, you know, I almost died last night, and this is not the business for me. I really think that I could make a nice living and be very satisfied teaching cooking and writing poetry.
Wow.
That's who I am, and that's what I want to do, and I don't want to go on this interview. I just can't do it. And she said, well, they're really, really interested in you. And she talked me into it, so I went in really not caring, and I think that's how you get a part.
I think you're right.
I wasn't desperate. I wasn't trying to please. I was just like, this is my last interview.
Yeah.
And it was almost like, what a relief. And now I can kind of focus my life on something that I actually could pull off. I could pull off teaching cooking. And so I read. They said, thank you very much. I drive home, and I think, done, over. I'm out of show business, even though I was never really in it. And hopefully Johnny Carson will still have me on if I write another poetry book. And over.
And life will be good.
Yeah, life will be good.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe this man will marry me.
Which he did, but go ahead.
Eventually. And the phone rings. And it's this kind of an agent who wasn't really, no papers, nothing. She said, oh, my God, you got the part. And I said,
wow.
I was so over. I said, what part? She said, Three's Company. And
wow.
I couldn't believe it. Again, this surreal thing happened. And I walked onto the set that first day with John Ritter and Joyce DeWitt, who are both so highly trained, feeling inadequate, and I told them all, I said, I just have to tell you, I have a supreme interest in this craft, but it was cut short by life events, and I will do everything I can to pull this off and learn. And there was one producer of Nichols, Ross & West, Mickey Ross, who was an old vaudevillian, and he took me under his wing, kind of like Henry Higgins took Eliza Doolittle under his wing.
Yep.
And he worked with me in the way that, remember Nadia Comaneci and her coach?
And her coach, yeah.
Remember, and remember Nadia do a flip on the board, and she, first thing she'd do, not listen to the audience, she'd look over
to
at
her coach. Absolutely.
And he'd either give her a thumbs up or a thumbs down. Well, that's how
that's a relationship.
Nikki Ross worked with me. I would do a scene, and when I finished, I looked right at him, and he'd call me over, and he'd either give me a thumbs up or a thumbs down, and he taught me to hear the music of comedy. And I remember one day, if you watch the episodes, it's fun that these are all going to be out. The year one, I was hanging on by my claws, and I think I succeeded because it was so raw. It was so unpolished. It was so naive, and I was so naive. I even looked different. I'd never had my hair or makeup done professionally.
Right. Yeah.
By year two, professional people had started taking over my hair and makeup, and my look was changing, and I met this one hairdresser, Bjorn, who was always stoned, and he said to me one day, "Baby."
And probably very creative, by the way.
Very creative. And he said, "I think Chrissy Snow should have snow white hair and big pink cheeks and dark eyes." And I said, "Do it." So he made my hair snow white, and that's when the character really took off, because I looked in the mirror, and I looked like Chrissy Snow. And so one day, in kind of three-quarters of the way through the second season, I'm watching John Ritter, and it hit me. Oh, comedy is musical. It's set up, beat. I'm musical. I always got the leads in all the musicals. I get music. And that was when it took off. I got it. I was able to give her a moral code, what she would and wouldn't do,
sure,
in a way that the audience would anticipate her, because they knew what she would and wouldn't do. Is it delicious to do a character when the audience laughs before you do it?
Right. Just the anticipation, exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. So.
Well, did the producers allow you to develop the character, or did they completely control what was happening in front of the camera, or did you have a piece of that?
Well, after a while, the chemistry and the dance between John Ritter and myself, Jack and Chrissy, became so enormous that what we rehearsed in the rehearsal room was there. But they had isolated cameras on both of us, and because it was tape and not film, you didn't have to be so specific as to hit your mark. On tape, the whole set is lit. If you're doing a film series, you can't ad lib because it's only lit for that X that's on the floor. I find film very limiting in that way. And so when the audience would laugh at something we didn't anticipate in rehearsal, Jack and Chrissy would keep on going. And those were those delicious moments that couldn't be written. They were just incredible.
It was a pretty scandalous and racy for the time on television. You know, I was 9 in 77, and I will tell you that initially my folks would not let me watch the show that first season. They finally warmed up because I think they realized it was probably less about the sexual references and double entendres and more the fun, simple slapstick humor that really kind of took over the show. And in the first 4 years, even though the critics weren't fond of the show was consistently in the top 10. Three of the four seasons that you were on, or the first four seasons, it was number 2 for the first 2 years, number 3. It was really the golden age of the series when you were on.
And at a time that will never happen again, only 3 choices. There was ABC, NBC, and CBS.
Right,
and everybody was watching ABC because of that Tuesday night lineup with
Happy Days.
Shirley, Three's Company, and Happy Days.
Right.
It was really quite a powerhouse night. Yeah, it's funny that it was considered risque in light of what's on TV today.
Oh, yeah.
It was non-sexual. I mean, nothing was ever going on in that house. Chrissy Snow was finally kissed, I think, in the last season, and that was that scene where Jack and Janet, who really were the parents, were pacing, and where is she, and where is she? I knew we shouldn't have let her go out. If you really analyze it, if I was the child and they were the parents.
Right.
And Jack opens the door, and there I am, with my arms around my date's neck, his arms around my waist, and my feet were in the air, bowed out, one going one direction, one going the other, the way you would expect Chrissy Snow would get kissed for the first time.
Yeah, yeah.
The most non-sexual kiss ever on television. So it was really, there was something very safe about this series. I don't know why the critics at that time didn't want to like Three's Company. There's something about it that irritated the press. We never got good press.
Yeah.
And Chrissy Snow never got good press. And in looking back, I think Chrissy Snow was a delicious character. I think Jack Tripper was a delicious character. And last year I was lying in bed one Saturday night watching Saturday Night Live, and on comes Lady Gaga, Justin Timberlake, and I don't know who the third person was.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, Lady Gaga was playing Chrissy Snow, and Justin Timberlake was Jack, and they were doing this mock-up of, if it's three-way, then it ain't gay. And they did this whole song and dance thing, and I looked at my husband, and I said, amazing that they fired me, and here, all these years later, the character is still iconic.
Oh, of course.
Maybe by getting fired, it left the country wanting more. That's all I've ever heard of. Oh, I miss you on that show. Oh, why aren't you doing that show anymore? So,
well, that was the thing. That was the thing. Yeah. After four successful seasons, you know, the fourth season came along. The show was rated number two, handful of points from number one. You were looking for an increase in salary, and which would put you on par with most of the male actors in a top ten show. The Fonz became the breakout star on Happy Days. J.J. Walker became the breakout star on Good Times. And although it was truly an ensemble, you, John, and Joyce, producers felt John was the star of the show and that Ray's was never going to come. And was it because it was a time in history where it was more of a male-dominated business that was running it and they didn't recognize the contribution?
Absolutely. And I don't say this as a female victim. I've never been a victim. But my contract was up. I had every right to renegotiate.
Yeah.
When I went in and said, the men in television on lesser shows than mine are making 10 and 15 times more than I am.
Yeah.
And I have the highest demographics of any woman on television at that time. They wanted to make an example so that no other woman in television at that time would get uppity and ask for parity. And I've gotten a call, an inside call from someone at ABC, very high up, and they said to my husband, they said, look, they're going to hang a nun in the marketplace, and it's going to be Suzanne. So just know that going in. And I thought, why would they want to get rid of Chrissy Snow?
Yeah.
Why would they want to do that? That's like getting rid of Edith.
Yeah.
With Archie Bunker. I mean,
well, yeah, even
Archie
as a
Bunker's
viewer,
great, but he needed Edith to play off of, and same thing. And I think the reason that John never talked to me again was he was so angry at losing his great sparring partner.
Yeah, that's a shame. Because I was going to say, the relationships didn't get maintained after that happened. It still was a top 20 show, but it wasn't the same. It wasn't number one, number two, number five.
Right.
It dropped quite a bit. And it's a shame that it broke some of the personal relationships.
Oh, it's terrible.
You had the, going the, on, too.
It's an interesting story. This Mickey Ross, who took me under his wing, I believe, this is my belief, that in that process he fell in love with me in the way that a father would desire his daughter but knows it's wrong. And so there was never any overtures. But when I married Alan Hamill, his demeanor towards me changed so much. And when the day of the negotiation came,
mm-hmm.
When my contract was up, it was my husband, who was then my manager, who went in to ABC, the lawyer's office. His name was George Sunderland, and Mickey Ross was sitting there. And my husband always describes the scene. He walks in, and Mickey Ross is a chain smoker, and he smokes with his thumb and his first finger, one of those kind of smokers.
Mm-hmm.
And he's sitting there smoking kind of violently. And my husband says, as you realize, Suzanne has, you know, brought enormous visibility to the show, and she's got the highest demographics of any woman in television. Every year she's on a minimum of 40 to 50 national magazine covers. She's been featured in Barbara Walters and had her own specials and everything, and yet the men are making 10 to 15 times more, so she would like you to pay what she's paying some of the men. And Mickey Ross took his cigarette and threw it on the floor of the ABC lawyer's office and stomped it out on the floor, and comes over to my husband and leans over him and says, "You want me to share my blood with her?" And my husband leaned forward and said, "Yes." And he said, "She's fired." And that was
Wow.
And then fired was one thing, but they forced me to work off
your contract.
Yeah. So that's when they relegated me to 1 minute at the end of the show, a phone call from my sick aunt's house calling Jack and Janet, who I never saw again or talked to. I was just talking to a dead telephone.
It's amazing.
And would say, "Oh, I miss you so much, but she's still so sick, and I don't know when I'll be back." And that went on for the rest of the season. When they show the episodes, they never show those 1 minute because they're pathetic. And sometimes when I think about it, it was so crazy because they would have a guard meet me out at the back door. We were taping at CBS, even though it was an ABC show. Walk me into a cordoned off corridor. I wasn't allowed to interact or see anybody else in the show.
That's
like
so
a prisoner.
Horrible. Yeah.
I'd go in. My hair and makeup person would do my beauty stuff, and then I'd be taken out to this poorly lit little corner set, away from the other set. I didn't see one person from the crew, a chair, a lamp, and a telephone, and I'd do my minute and then go home. And I would leave crying every week because it was so wrong. It was so wrong. So it was, I think after that, there were, I remember at one of the NatP, or whatever the convention is where they sell syndicated shows, I think it's NatP. One of the executives got up and said, the loss in syndication fees with the firing of Suzanne Summers is in the untold millions and maybe more, because the shows without the Chrissy Snow character just don't get the same revenue as the other ones.
I bet.
So I think after that, the next one who asked for money was Roseanne, and they gave it to her. No problem. She got $750,000 a week. And people go, $750,000? Well, if you knew what the back-end revenue, if you knew that this goes into billions, it's chump change. And this business is one that there are no guarantees. If you go to law school, you'll be a lawyer. If you go to med school, you'll be a doctor, and you're going to make an income. Some are better than others, of course. You are an actor, or you study acting, or you have ability. You're never guaranteed that you will ever, ever get a job. Think of all the talent that's sitting there that will never be seen or heard. So if you do hit it, if you do luck into a threes company, it's your golden moment and to make the most of. And I had never had any money in my life, and I felt very deserving of it, that I sold as many tickets as any of those men that were getting paid those enormous salaries.
So. Sure. Now, I know you said you didn't really speak to anybody for so many years now, and I know you had Joyce DeWitt on your show a couple years ago on YouTube, and I remember when it came out, and I remember where I saw it on social media, where I saw it, that it was happening, and I remember watching it that day. It was such a sense of urgency to see the two of you together, and I'm looking at it on YouTube now, 1.1 million views. That must have been pretty emotional.
Yes, and, you know, I would like to take credit for doing something that extraordinary, but we were doing this, my Breaking Through series, which was a 7-minute daily show, as determined by the interest on the Internet. No one will watch anything longer than 7 minutes these days.
Yeah, fair enough.
On the Internet. And one of my young producers in New York came up to me and nervously said, "I took the liberty to call Joyce DeWitt to see if she wanted to come on your show, and she's amenable to it if you'll talk to her first." And I said, I got mad at her. I said, "Who gave you the authority? I've never talked to her. We don't talk to each other." So I go back to my hotel room that night. I'm lying in bed in the dark, and I thought, how stupid Suzanne, how small, how unevolved Suzanne. And I went in the next day, and I said, "Forgive me for my knee-jerk reaction. You are so right. What a brilliant idea." She said, "Well, the only caveat that Joyce has is that she'd like to talk to you first." And I said, "Absolutely." So I called Joyce the night before, and she said, "I just want to make sure you don't ambush me." And I said, "Oh, my, you don't, it's been years since, I would never do that. I would not have done that even then either." I said, I think this will provide closure for you, for me, for those who cared about that show.
Yeah.
I said, I have one thing I want to ask you. And she said, yeah. I said, I would like to not see you before the show. I would like the moment that we see each other for the first time in 30 years to be the moment that is on the air.
Oh, you could tell.
She agreed to that.
You could tell, yeah.
When she came out, that was, and it was genuine. My heart just flooded with feelings at that moment of these two women shared a moment in time like no one else ever will again. There will never be that kind of narrow focus on one particular program because we have such diversity now and the internet, which didn't even exist then.
Right.
And weren't we lucky? And that's what I really wanted to just provide closure.
Yeah.
And gratitude and, you know, remember the good things.
Well, it just tells you the power of the show and the role it played in the world of pop culture and television history.
And the power of forgiveness.
Absolutely.
You know, it's a gift to give yourself. And it was like, I have very few things in my life that I've hung on to. I've pretty much worked through everything. That was one of those things hanging out there. And now that's okay, too. And I had the opportunity to talk to John 1 month before he died. 30 years had gone by. And I'm having my hair, I'm in the shampoo bowl at a beauty salon, and the receptionist comes up and says, you have a phone call. And I said, can you take a message? I'll call back. She said, it's John Ritter. And I sat up with my wet hair, and I went into this little back room, and there was John. And he said, look, I forgive you, which I had to deal with that a little bit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Of,
right.
Oh, well, okay,
yeah.
All right. It was just a bit of a, wow, we're coming from two different places.
Right,
but I said,
right.
I went past that, and I said, I can't even tell you what it means to me to talk to you. And he said, look, I'm doing a show called 8 Simple Rules, and the writers have written this dream sequence that in my dream, Janet and Chrissy are in the dream. And I said, you know, people have wanted to see a reunion for so long. I just feel there's a better way to do it. And I said, I have wanted to work with you ever since I left that show. There was something about you and I that was magic. I don't know if it's a continuation of these two characters or it's two that are like it or something completely different, but we have magic together. And if you won't take this the wrong way, now that we've rekindled, let's look for that project. And we both agreed, let's look for that project. And then a month later, he was gone. So I found resolution with him. I found resolution with Joyce, and I did not walk away from being fired bitter and angry. I used it like judo. When I sat in my living room in that first year after being fired, questioning myself, why did I do it? Why wasn't I just happy with the salary I was getting? It wasn't like it was bad. It just was 10 to 15 times less than the men, but who did I think I was? And I was questioning everything, and I heard a voice. I hear voices, and the voice said, why are you focused on what you don't have? Why don't you focus on what you do have? And I thought, what do I have? What do I have? Geez, I have enormous visibility. Every person in this country knows my name. So I went to my husband and I said, you know, I sing. And I said, you know, I've done these specials and I'd like to go to Vegas. And so we put together a Vegas act and I went to Vegas and 5 years later I'm walking on stage with Frank Sinatra. He was Male Entertainer of the Year, and I was Female Las Vegas Entertainer of the Year. And during those times, during the day that I was doing nightclubs, I started writing my books. And I think, in the end, I think it's all perfect. I think I got that enormous visibility. I wasn't looking for it. I think it all leads up to what I'm doing now, which is this work I never thought I'd be doing.
Which is incredible. I mean, you've got this huge entrepreneurial side that started with the Thighmaster in the early 90s, and now you've evolved into an incredible line of health and beauty products. And we're going to talk about that and more with Suzanne Summers next on 720 WGN. Stay player on 720 WGN. We're talking to the ever lovely, and by the way, you look amazing, Suzanne Summers.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Now, your business side evolved quickly in the early 90s with the launch of the Thighmaster, and now you have an amazing line of health and beauty products. And I know a little bit about them because my wife is a fan of your moisturizer. So tell me a little bit about your products, the makeup of your products.
Well, let me roll back just a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, the negatives we are sent in life can all be turned into judo if we choose to do that. So how did I go from the stories I've just been telling you in Three's Company and all of that to this career I have now where I keynote doctors' conventions and teach doctors about this new way to age? It all started with getting cancer 14 years ago.
Right.
And cancer can either do you in, or you can question it and take charge of it and manage it and decide to not let it win. And I believe cancer is manageable. In fact, one doctor I interviewed in one of my books, Knockout, Doctors Who Are Curing Cancer Without Drugs, he said to me, you know, cancer is manageable. I said, what do you mean by that? He said, you give it what it wants, it'll leave you alone. I said, what does it want? He said, it wants good nutrition and it wants a detox body. And so I decided instead of chemotherapy that I would change everything about my life, change the way I ate. I looked at my diet and lifestyle habits up till that point, and I didn't know anything about nutrition. I thought I was eating right. You know, I ate, you know, the standard American diet, but I ate a lot of things out of bags and boxes. And when you do television series, of which I did a total of 21 years, there's always a craft table, which is all filled with
junk
chemical
food.
Things that are usually orange. Orange and powdery.
And you've
got nervous energy on a TV set, so you grab for that stuff. And I did a lot of that. I stayed up late. I was writing my books then. I was staying up till 3 in the morning thinking I was ahead of the game because the phone wasn't ringing. I wasn't getting enough sleep. I wasn't managing stress. I wasn't thinking about nutrition as fuel for my body. So cancer made me go, whoa, what have I been doing to play host to this disease? And I decided from that moment on I would eat as though my life depended upon it. And then I really started looking into the effects of toxins on the human body and the enormous exposure that we've all experienced in the last 50 years, how the planet has changed. And that naturally led into the organic skincare line, certified toxic-free, and the toxic-free and organic makeup line, and now we're coming out with household cleaners.
Yeah, I think and that's what my wife loves about it. It's natural, it's organic, you don't, it's gluten-free, there's no animal testing. I mean, that's, you know, I hate to say it, but as much as that's talked about in the press and as much as you read about those things, they're still far, those products are still few and far between.
Yes, and I burst with pride with ours. There's not a single chemical in any of it. Even our preservatives are made from Japanese flowers, and it's the most beautiful product. Your skin just looks better. And the way I talk to women on the shopping channel when I'm selling it, I go, the skin is the largest organ in the body. And if you were to look at your skin under a microscope, what we know as pores would look like big holes. So imagine you've got this covering all over your body that's got big holes in it, and now you're rubbing and slathering lotions and potions filled with chemicals. Well, where's it going to go? It's going to drop into those holes, and then it's going to find its way in your bloodstream, and then it can't do anything good. It's going to go look to do something bad.
I think you're talking about things people think about all the time, but really don't do much about.
Right. And I think in today's world, we have to. The epidemic of environmental diseases is unbelievable. The kids in school have ADD, ADHD, OCD, bipolar, autism, dyslexia, dyspraxia, schizophrenia. It goes on and on, and these are all, they're finding conditions that are exacerbated by toxins invading the GI tract, eating little holes through the GI tract lining, leaking out. They call it leaky gut, and these toxins leak out into the bloodstream and start looking around for areas of opportunity. And in children, it's going right to their brains, and they're getting all these attention deficits. And orthodox medicine's response to that is to put all these kids on amphetamines. So I was talking to a doctor the other day, and I said, I think half the people in my grandchildren's schools are on these drugs. He said, only half? He said, that's pretty good. He said, It's horrible. And he said, not only are these amphetamines, like, I won't even name them. I don't want to get in trouble.
First of all, I'm just having a hard time with you saying the fact that you have grandchildren, but go ahead.
But yeah, as I always say to my grandchildren, whenever anything happens, I go, because I'm a, and in chorus they all go, a different kind of grandmother.
That's cute. That's cute. That's cute. But you've got all these skin care, makeup, body care. You've got an organics line. You've got supplements that you sell as well and have put together. What are some of the supplements? What, you know, there's some things for your, for bones. I mean, obviously that's an issue for women.
Right. Well, I believe in supplementation. If, you know, if the soil wasn't damaged and the air wasn't full of pollution and acid rain, et cetera, we wouldn't need to do any of that. But the fuel that keeps our bodies running has degraded, so you got to supplement to give the body what it needs for optimal performance. So if the most important thing anybody could take, if you only took one, I know you're going to think I'm going to say a multivitamin, which is important, but I'm not going to say that. The most important thing every person alive can take now because of toxins is a probiotic every morning and every night. And that is because of that phenomenon I'm telling you about, how the toxins get into the GI tract and eat through the lining. It's because the eco-balance is not right from overuse of antibiotics, overuse of over-the-counter drugs, from diet sodas, chemical processed foods. The balance is off. And so what you have to do to strengthen that barrier wall so you don't get these leaks and have it, you know, wreak havoc in your body, is to replace the good flora on a daily basis in a polluted environment that's trying to wipe it out every day. You have to, like, stay ahead of the game. So probiotics. And then from there, then you go to fish oil, essential fatty acids, essential for life, but the body doesn't make it, so you have to get it from the outside. And and our fish has been damaged. It's terrible. I mm-hmm. mean, really.
Yeah, yeah.
It'd be better to get it from food, but if it's not there, if the fish you're eating is laden with mercury and PCBs and all those things, heavy metals, kind of counterproductive. So the human body is 90 trillion cells, approximately. I don't know who counted. Some really anal person, but anyway, that's the count.
Okay.
Let's say give or few on either side.
Now,
every one of those cells has a membrane around it, and that membrane is made of omega-3 essential fatty acids. You get that from coconut oil or olive oil or flax oil or quality grass-fed beef, pork, lamb, and the byproducts of those animals, as long as it's organic. There's one other thing on the SuzanneSummers.com
yeah.
that would be of interest.
Yeah.
We are under a great attack from electromagnetic radiation and electromagnetic frequencies from smart meters, from our electric company are putting in. They're creating grids over our houses, and this affects the heart, the brain, the electrical system of the body. But cell phones, there finally is research that cell phones are now being associated with meningioma tumors and developing glioblastoma and things, and this was in the British Journal Occupational and Environmental Medicine journal. So I am a spokesperson for a company called LifeWave, and they made a chip that you put into your cell phone between the case and the cell phone. I think it's, I don't know, is it $100? Is it under $100? Maybe it's $70, but I really should know, but I don't know.
Okay.
It's such a worthwhile investment. It has all the testing on SuzanneSummers.com. We use the most prestigious lab in America to do this testing. It protects you from electromagnetic rads from your cell phone by 98%. And you've seen on television where they're talking about women who keep the cell phone in their, you know, breast pocket, they're getting breast cancer, and little boys are keeping it in their pocket and they're growing third testicles.
Oh, I think people think about this all the time, that cell phones can cause something like that, and they don't really think about it. And you wonder if in 20 years you're gonna, or 10 years you're gonna hear about it like cigarettes, you know, for
well,
so many years.
Well, this thing is a one-time buy. It
yeah.
doesn't wear out.
Yeah.
It's and I should know the price and I don't, but in the big picture. And if I had small children, and all my grandchildren have this because their brains are not formed yet, protect their brains, and you just put it between your cell phone case and your cell phone, and think of that protection. I think that that's one of the most extraordinary new products out there on the market because of the enormity of cell phone use.
And that's a LifeWave Matrix 2, and you can find that also.
Matrix 2
on SuzanneSummers.com.
Right.
Thank you so much for spending some time with us, Suzanne, tonight. It was absolutely a pleasure.
Thank you for stimulating my brain to remember those very pleasant memories.
It was my pleasure. Thank you so much again.
Thank
Enjoy
you.
Your Sunday.
I will. Thank you.
All right. Much more ahead on 720 WGN.